is the power of positive thinking. Interestingly, it was suggested by one of our students that we must have a lecture on what he said, negativism, a stumbling block. But since we are going to emphasize finally on the positiveness and the positive attitude, we reframed the subject as the power of positive thinking. It is said that you can tether an elephant merely by a thread if the elephant thinks that he is captive. That is, if the elephant thinks that he is captive, only a thread is required to tie him with, and yet he will not run away because he thinks he is captive. Now, this may or may not be true about the elephant, but the metaphor surely applies to human beings. Because everything depends upon what we think we can or cannot do. We are not able to realize all our possibilities because we ourselves impose limitations on our capacities and our potentialities. So as Buddha says in the light on the path, in light of Asia, that ye are not bound, the soul of things is sweet. Within yourselves deliverance must be sought, each man his prison makes. And this prison, we realize, is made because of and through our thoughts. In fact, the name we call man in Sanskrit and the vernacular language as Manushya, which comes from the root Manu, Mana, to think. So we say man, Manushya, is a thinker. One of the prerogatives or the privileges which a man has is this power to think, which the animal does not have. And yet, surprisingly, if we are told that it's very rarely that we make use of this power of thinking in the true sense of the word. Now, how is this? As someone has said, someone called Jane Taylor, she says, though man a thinking being is defined, that is, man is defined as a thinking being, few use the grand prerogative of mind, how few think justly of the thinking few, how many never think who think they do. How many people, in fact most of us, think that we are thinking, but really we are not making use of the power to think. In this is said in the sense that how many times we can say that our ideas, our thoughts, what we call as our opinions, are the result of our thinking about it. More often than not, these are all sponge-like, absorbed from newspapers, from the elders of the family, from the traditions, and so on. We have not really done this process of thinking what we call our opinions and our ideas. And yet we all think, that is a fact. As Sri Krishna says, no man resteth a moment inactive. Say, if you are not acting, say, on the level of speaking or actions, you are still active on what we call the mental plane. Then it is important for us to first see, when we say we are thinking, what is the kind of thoughts that is coming and going from our minds. At the end of the day, if we just would say kind of go through the thoughts that have come and gone from our mind, we find that it's all a conglomeration, a mixture of variety of thoughts. For example, we would be thinking about what shall I cook today, what shall I wear today, what's the kind of work that is waiting for me in the office, planning for the future, anxieties about the family members, financial matters. Then it could be for a student thinking about his subject, studies which is studied at school or college. Or maybe we are thinking about the work in the office, computers or legal matters or whatever. Very rarely would the thoughts be like addressed to or directed towards some high theme that we may have read in the book. Very rarely, even more rarely, would our thoughts be engaged towards finding out what is the best way of helping so-and-so who is, say, going through this suffering or this problem. It's very rarely that our thoughts are of that quality. So this is, we are saying this so that we are aware that we are beginning at this level where the thoughts are, as we can say, more self-regarding, if not selfish. They are more self-regarding and self-centered. And as the first speaker did remind us, that the first thing is to become aware of kind of thoughts that enter our minds. And that's why the first quotation you see, it tells us, strive with thy thoughts unclean. And unclean doesn't necessarily mean very wicked thoughts. Though now and then we do have these thoughts of hatred and anxiety and envy and all that. Strive with thy thoughts unclean, unwholesome thoughts, before they overpower thee. Use them as they will thee, for if thou sparest them, and they take root and grow, know well, these thoughts will overpower and kill thee. Beware, disciple, suffer not, that is, allow not, even though it be their shadow to approach. If thou wouldst not be slain by them, then must thou harmless make thy own creations, the children of thy thoughts, unseen, impalpable, that swarm round the humankind. Two very important things are said here. One thing is that it is possible for us to observe and control our thoughts. And second thing is that our thoughts are our creations. We shall see a little more on both of these things. But before that, let us see the second quotation, which says, the thinker and his thoughts are plainly two different things. The thinker has primary creative powers called variously imagination, fancy, speculation, anticipation, etc. The thinker may be considered to be a conscious unit, a perceiver. Thoughts are forms and images made by the thinker. These have an endurance quality, that is the permanence, dependent on the force or the power with which they were made. Now, it's very important to grasp it that the thinker and the thoughts are two different things. Because the thinker is different, he can observe the thoughts. Generally, what happens? An unwholesome thought enters the mind. It can be anxiety, it can be, say, anger, hatred, or criticism for another. And what happens is that we immediately get this feeling as, oh, how bad I am, how could I think about it? Also, we talk about repentance. But when we repent, what do we generally do? We, instead of, say, trying to find out the cause, and instead of, say, determining that, yes, next time I will see that it doesn't repeat itself, and then dismissing the thought, we, as they say, mull over it, brood over it, again and again, the same matter is gone over in the mind. Or we try to repress these thoughts. That is even worse. When you just push it back to the unconscious or the lower levels of your consciousness, not even recognizing that this bad thought is part of me or it has arisen in my mind, it is again going to recur. Or we take a very lax attitude. Oh, it is only this time. Next time I will see that such a thought doesn't arise in my mind. But this part where we go over and over again over that thought, which also happens in case of grief and self-pity. We also say, we therefore say, wallowing in the grief or wallowing in the self-pity, where you are unrestrainedly going over that thought. And theosophy says that by going over that thought, you are giving it a power which it does not ordinarily have. Whereas the thing to do is, because we are a thinker separate from the thought, you can merely take the position of an observer. As they say, you can have a sakshi bhav. Just witness this thought enter the mind, but not get identified with it. You are not the whole of that thought. There is a large area of your mind which is not this thought. So you can have a sakshi bhav or have this thing of witnessing it. And we are also told that you can displace these negative thoughts by a corresponding positive thought. If it is the thought of, say, hatred, you can displace it by the corresponding thought of love, charity, kindness, or whatever. And it is, as Milton says, evil into the mind of gods and angels may enter, but leave no stain. That it can arise in their mind, but since they do not allow it to inhere, it just passes by. It's a thought is like someone knocking on the door. You open the door, but you can allow him inside or not is dependent on you. That power the thinker has. And that is why it's very important for us to know that the thinker and the thought are two different things. Now, we said that these thoughts can recur. They have what is known as the self-productive power. And in one of the pamphlets, called the cyclic return of impressions, Mr. Judge points out that these thoughts, they have a tendency to recur, and he takes only one example, the example of the thoughts of depression. One of his friends was suffering from these depressive thoughts returning, and he told this friend that you can maintain a diary and you will find that these thoughts of depression return at regular intervals, maybe every 15 days, every 2 weeks, every 4 weeks, every month. But when these thoughts return, you can start in your mind by a deliberate effort of will, joyous thoughts. He says, if nothing else, try and feel the joys of other people around you. And the whole idea being that when these depressive thoughts return, by the law of association, they will bring back with them this cycle of joyous thoughts which you have created. And like the third law of Newton, the two billiard balls from the opposite direction coming will interact and counteract each other's effect. These thoughts of depression will be counteracted by the joyous thoughts. And in time, he says, you would have succeeded in establishing a joyous cycle in place of this cycle of depression that you are going through. So this is very important. And if we don't do this, and as we said earlier, if we just allow these depressive thoughts to continue passing in our mind or say brood over it, then as the first quotation points out, they will grow in power and they will overpower and kill thee. If thou wouldst not be slain by them, then must thou harmless make thy own creations. What is meant by if thou wouldst not be slain by them? It only means that by encouraging these thoughts or not taking a remedial action, they will become a kind of a block in your mind. Because you know that so long as you are involved in the problem and going and thinking over and over again of this problem, even if your higher nature wants to give you guidance, you are blocking that channel of communication with your higher self, so you can't get that guidance coming from your higher self so long as you are involved in these negative thoughts. But it says, you have to harmless make thy own creations. Now, in what way are our thoughts our creations? In theosophy, we are told that every time that a thought arises in your mind, we may feel that the thought has arisen, it has left the mind, and therefore it has disappeared. But we are told that immediately it combines or coalesces itself with a unit of life energy called an elemental. This is slightly technical, and it becomes an entity. Now, to oversimplify matter, we can say, as a master says, every time you think a good thought, it's like you have created an angel. Every time you think a bad thought, it's like you have created a demon. And as we were once told, that so you fix your mind with the thoughts of hatred towards another person, it's like on an invisible plane you are sending a tiny man with a stick to beat that person. If you can only visualize what is happening on an invisible occult plane, that's what you are doing by creating an angry or a hateful thought for another person. Also, it is said that this entity which you have created, it will last for a long or a short time depending upon the intensity of your thought. And it is said that if a person who is normally thinking good thoughts, and suddenly if he thinks or gets a bad thought in his mind for someone, the intensity of that thought is more because he has the knowledge. He has the knowledge not to encourage these thoughts in his mind, and yet he has given vent to this thought, this feeling, and so the intensity of the thought engendered in the mind of a good person is far more intense. Now we may say that may be because he was tired at that day, or that can be the weakness of the moment. In his weaker moment, he may have done due to moral depression. And that is why we are told to be vigilant all the time. Vigilant as to what are the kind of thoughts entering our mind. In fact, in one of these places, in the Voice of the Silence, we are told, you have to be careful as to what thoughts enter thy soul's bright shrine. That it's like in the puja room, you will not enter wearing your chappals or without taking bath. It's something like that. You should not allow your mind to be polluted by these unwholesome thoughts. And as someone has said, eternal vigilance is the price of safety. So continuously we have to be aware of what kind of thoughts are entering our minds. And that is why we also lay a lot of emphasis as to what literature we read, what kind of movies we see, whether it is horrifying movies, sensuous movies, literature which is, say, of a sensuous nature. A person thinks, oh, I see these horror movies, but you know, I never get affected. I come out of the theater and forget about it. I read the book and forget about it. But are we sure? Does it not leave an impression in some level of our mind, some level of our consciousness, which then erupts when we are in our unguarded moments and takes hold over you? Now, we said that each one of us is therefore continuously creating these entities. And in fact, wherever we go, we are carrying this whole army of entities or elementals along with us. And therefore, we can see, even in our ordinary experience, that there are certain people who are predisposed to having good, noble thoughts for other people. Generally, they will not say things which are, say, of criticizing nature or hateful nature. And in their company, when you are, you really feel a bit of calmness and peace. So much more in case of a rishi, a sage, a great being, we are told that they are continuously thinking from a high plane, continuously thinking the thoughts of which are beneficent for humanity. So it is said that they people their current in space with entities which are powerful for good alone. They charge the whole atmosphere with these beneficent thoughts. So sometimes in the picture we are shown that a rishi or a sage is sitting, and around him you find various animals. A tiger, a lion, a deer, a rabbit, all of them are sitting together in a kind of amity. Because of the total harmlessness within him, he is radiating out and charging the atmosphere around him also with these kind of thoughts, which affects these, even the animals and of course human beings if they are around. So what kind of atmosphere we carry with us depends on our thoughts. It's like pollution around. That if you use a car with wrong kind of petrol and the wrong kind of machinery, you add to the pollution. And if the right thing is used, you reduce the pollution. Or it's like a contagious disease. Something like that happens even with our thoughts. Now, that's why HPP says that what kind of thoughts a man, thoughts and desires a man encourages in his mind, allows to take root and grow there, is more important than to worry about whether he is a vegetarian or a non-vegetarian. Now, we see therefore that we are paying attention to what kind of thoughts are entering our minds, even to the extent of, as the first quotation says, even if it be their shadow to approach. Because we might say, if we look at our thoughts, that I'm not obviously wicked, or I'm not obviously greedy, I don't want to steal anyone's purse, but are we sure if it is not even their shadow to approach? That is, in a very subtle way, these thoughts of, say, envy and jealousy and hatred enter our minds. It is said that the moment you begin to compare yourself with another person, it's a beginning of or the sign of jealousy or envy. Or the minute you may feel that you are not hating that person. But the minute in your mind you start thinking, oh, the way he speaks, his pronunciations are so bad, his dressing way is not right, the lecture, nothing substantial was given out. If these thoughts are there, they are the beginning of hatred, which it can result into hatred. So we've got to be careful. Now, why are we paying so much attention to the thoughts? In theosophy, we are told that the real plane of action is thought. That the real, you may not act it out, but the real plane of action is thought, as Jesus said, that a man who looks upon a woman to lust after her has already committed adultery. It doesn't mean that he has really committed adultery, but it is, he's already paving his way to doing that, because the distance between thinking and doing an act is very little. A boy may think, to take the same example, may like a girl very much, and he may think in an undesirable way about a girl. And he thinks that, oh, I'm only thinking about her, I have not done anything to her as yet. But he goes over once, twice, three times, he thinks, and when the opportunity arises, he just might translate his thoughts into action. So the real thing begins at the level of thought. And yet we say that intellect by itself moves nothing. So thoughts are not everything. To it, you have to add feeling or desires. And the thoughts and the feelings, when they go hand in hand, the action can result. Also, it is true that desires cannot inhere in vacuum. Desires need to be backed by thoughts. As Mr. Crosby says, you cannot get attached to something you do not think about. If there are no thoughts, there is no attachment, there is no desire, there is no feeling. And in case of Buddha and Jesus, we are told that in some life, they would have first made this resolve. They must have first had this desire and these thoughts to become a Buddha or a Jesus. And they had to keep up this resolve over many lifetimes, act upon it to become what they were. So everything begins at the level of thought. A master of wisdom says that each member of Theosophy can become a powerful center of spiritual influences to which other like-minded students can be attracted, and then a powerful center can be formed. And Mr. Judge, reflecting upon this, says that why is it that each member is not able to become a powerful center? And he says that the first stumbling block, as it were, is this negative attitude. Students of Theosophy feel that who is interested in Theosophy today? People are so materialistic. Theosophy is very, very intellectual. Theosophy is so abstruse. Who will come? If they come, they will not stick. This whole bent of mind, or the thoughts at the base, are negative. So, as we see in the next quotation, in fact, we would like to read to you even the earlier quotation. The earlier two quotations are about the whole idea of the thoughts, positive thoughts, which should displace the negative thoughts. This is taken from the book, The Power of Positive Thinking, where the author says, when the mind is emptied, something is bound to enter. Start filling your mind with creative and healthy thoughts. Then, when the old fears, hates, and worries that have haunted you for so long try to edge back in, they will in effect find a sign on the door of your mind reading occupied. They may struggle for admission, but the new and healthy thoughts which you have taken in will now be stronger and better fortified, and therefore be able to repulse them. In the next quotation, we are told a very important idea with which we can connect what we are about to say, that it is not as if, as the first speaker did mention, it's not as if you hurt or you help yourself by your thinking, but you are also affecting people around with your thoughts, because on the mental plane, we are all interconnected. So if you feel that you have had a sinful thought or a wicked thought, and nothing has really happened, but as we saw earlier, other people who are, say, having consubstantial thought can attract your thought. In the same fashion, you can attract the bad thought created by someone, and in other words, you are giving an impetus to that person in the wrong direction. But the same thing works also in the right direction. If you have had the positive and good thoughts, when another person is, say, struggling with a moral problem, he gets an impetus with your positive thought. And that's what Mr. Judge points out in the next quotation. He says that the thought, as we saw, having become an active entity by its association with an elemental, is attracted wherever there is similar vibration, or let us say a suitable soil. Just as a winged thistle seed floats off and sows itself in this spot and not in that, in this soil, in the soil of its natural selection. Thus the man of virtue, by admitting a material or sensual thought into his mind, even though he expel it, sends it forth to swell the evil impulses of the man of vice, from whom he imagines himself to be separated by a wide gulf, and to whom he may have just given a fresh impulse to sin. Many men are like sponges, porous and bibulous, ready to suck up every element of the order preferred by their nature. We all have more or less of these qualities. We attract what we love. It is a solemn thought, this, of our responsibility for the impulse of another. Can we then be too careful to guard the ground of the mind, to keep close watch over our thoughts. And in the next quotation, the same thought is expressed by him, that the mind of man is capable of bringing about results through means of other minds about him. If we sit and think nothing can be done, then our subtle mind meets other minds within the radius of our sphere, not small, and shouts into them, nothing can be done, and then of course nothing is done. And elsewhere he gives the positive example to this, that supposing you want to say help people, suppose you see cyclone in Orissa, naturally you can't go out and do something yourself physically, but if you have the intense wish, desire and thought that these people should be helped, then he says your desire will strike like a vulcan and some receptive mind will catch it, and you will find that done which you wanted to be the doer of. So our thoughts on the positive side do have the influence. And that's why he says, if you only think theosophy, then your mind will whisper into the minds of others, theosophy, help and hope for thee. And what you want, or the result really would be miraculous. Now what does he mean by think theosophy? What he says is that there should be on the one hand the wish to benefit others, and on the other hand, this positive attitude that it can be done. We talk of three stages, Shravana, Manana, and the third stage is what is called Nija Dhyasa. Listening, reflecting, and there is constantly aspiring towards the thing or a goal day and night. So the students can ask themselves that have we made theosophy such a goal where day and night you aspire towards it? We were once given a lovely example that like the students, like the children in school, once they reach home, they finish their homework and immediately where do their minds turn? Towards the playground. It is their base. So have we made theosophy such a base that as soon as the mind becomes empty, it is turned towards theosophy? And this can be applicable to anything. Whatever we want to achieve, we have to constantly aspire towards it. One more thing is said by H.P. Blavatsky in Raja Yoga or Occultism. She points out that when there are certain people who never think with the higher faculties of their mind, and there are certain people who even on the trivial things, they think on a very higher plane or the higher faculties of mind. And when people say think about the trifling things from the higher plane of mind, in their case, their thoughts are intense and they acquire the creative power. When we say sankalpa, it's a very potent, it's a very significant word. We just loosely say, I have made a sankalpa to not get angry. By which we just mean that I have thought and I have just kind of formulated a wish in my mind that I will not get angry. But sankalpa, really, if you look at its etymology, it means some meanings to do completely and fully, and kalpa, from which the word kalpana, imagination, comes, it means to imagine. And sankalpa therefore means to so thoroughly think and imagine that whatever you have thought about would happen. And that is why we are told by Mr. Crosby in one place that sometimes this positive attitude is what is lacking. A student says that I will not get angry. Then he loses his temper. And at that point he says, next time I will not oscillate so much. Now when you say I will not oscillate so much, that very thing shows that he expects to oscillate at least a little. If he expects to oscillate, he will oscillate. It is better to expect to hit the mark. That is, the position is very different. To say that I will never get angry and to say that it's a possibility that I can sometimes lose my temper. He says the psychological position is different, and therefore the kind of energy which you arouse is also very different. The kind of energy when you arouse, when you say I will never get angry, is quite different from saying that there is a possibility of my erring. Now, even before we go a little further, we would just like to mention similar incidents. It's not just Mr. Judge mentioning it over here, but in the Power of Positive Thinking book, a very similar situation was in fact passed through by the author, the Norman Wilson PLA. They were running a magazine called Guidepost, and as it happened, they had some 40,000 subscribers, but the building caught fire and every single document was burnt. Now all three people who were running were really heartbroken and all kinds of negative thoughts that now how will we get the addresses of these subscribers, where will we get the money, it's impossible to start the magazine. And the lady who was financing the magazine came and she said that I'm not going to give you finance again for the magazine, and that was a death blow kind of. But she said something very important. The author says that she said that why are you guys thinking negatively? By you are creating the conditions of lack by thinking about lack. That if you are thinking that we are lacking everything and nothing will happen, nothing is going to happen. I mean, we are just mentioning because the similar thought is also put forward by Ms. Judge. And what she said additionally was, not only think positive, she in fact told that, can any of you imagine 1 lakh subscribers for your magazine? And one of them could actually imagine it that way, that there were 1 lakh subscribers for their magazine. And it is said that, of course, they worked at it. They, announced from the radios, television, that such and such a thing has happened. And actually, the author says, we had near about 1 lakh subscribers back again for our magazine. Now, we mentioned the power of imagination, and theosophy has a lot to say on the power of imagination. HBB says that it's a king faculty, that she points out regarding the diseases, that why you have diseases? That it's because people have fear mixed with wrong imagination. That's the root cause of many of our diseases. Remove the fear, she says, and give right bent to your imagination and most of your diseases will be gone. So potent is this what we call as the power of imagination. But of course, it's not just, we are not going to leave things at thinking about. And one most important thing is that when we think positively, somehow there is an attachment. We feel that this thing should happen when we are thinking positively. But there has to be complete detachment. It may and it may not happen. After all, depending upon karma and the divine will, it may and may not come about. So what we mean by positive thinking is having or providing the right basis. And with the positive thoughts, you are going to be able to put in or call forth your best efforts to do that thing. There is a difference between a person saying, I must get a first class, and a person saying, I can get a first class. When you say, I must get a first class, is asserting what we can say, our personal will, that I must, at every cost, I must get a first class. And you are disheartened and broken if you don't. But when you say, I can get, is like saying that there is a possibility. It's like moving something from the area of impossibility into area of a possibility, that it can happen. And of course, after this, you have to bring in the whole of your emotional nature in line with the thoughts. And in theosophy, we are told that behind will stands desire. That once the desire is intense, the thoughts are intense, the will can come into operation, and you can find the thing done which you wanted to really do. And there's this whole thing about creative will. It's a very abstruse subject, and we would just read to you this combination of thought, desire, will, and faith, and imagination. But the basis of all of these things is thought. Everything begins with thought. If the thoughts are not there, none of these things can come into picture. So this you will not find in your leaflet, but in the Isis Unveiled at one place, she quotes Van Helmont, who said, the will is the first of all powers. For through the will of the Creator, all things were made and put into motion. We are told that the whole universe came into existence with Kriya Shakti and Ichha Shakti. That is the power of thought backed by the power of will. And the will is the property of all spiritual beings and displays itself in them the more actively, the more they are freed from matter. This is also very important, as one of these quotations says, that why is it that in our case, this will doesn't come into operation? Because our ideas, as we can see, we have reduced this will to pinholes of personal desires and selfishness. Do we not see that we ourselves stand in the way of the use of the power within us because our ideas are selfish, small, and mean? Moreover, Paracelsus says, faith must confirm the imagination, for faith establishes will. Determined will is the beginning of all magical operations. Because men do not perfectly imagine and believe the result, is the arts so uncertain, while they may become perfectly certain. Elsewhere in Isis, she says, with expectancy supplemented by faith, you can cure yourself of any morbific condition. Now, going back to this idea of the positive thoughts, it has much larger connotation. We can see that depending upon the kind of thinking and the ideas we have, we are also going to base our life as a man. Again and again we give this example that if a man thinks that he is, say, born in sin, if in the earlier times if women or the untouchables felt that, oh, the scriptures, we can't read them, nirvana is not for us, as Upali the barber asked Buddha, is nirvana for such as I? And Buddha had to say yes. If it was not so, would I even tell you? So if you are, say, right, starting with a lot of wrong ideas, you are going to proceed with the wrong ideas and you will never be able to give full play to the potentialities. We are told that each one of us can become a Buddha. But on the other hand, if we continue to think that, no, I am born in sin, I am such a petty little thing, how can I become a Buddha? So this and many wrong ideas can come and as a stumbling block in our path in realizing our potentialities. The last quotation, Mr. Crosby gives this example. It's a very lovely example he gives. He says that in the East, they catch monkeys by putting nuts in a jar which is having a very narrow top. The monkey puts his hand and he grabs at the nuts. Then he's having it in the fist, in his fist, and then he tries to remove his hand, but so long as he's holding on to the nuts, he's not able to remove. If only he would let go of these nuts, he can become free. But he doesn't know well to do this. And he says, we are much like these monkeys. We don't let go of our nutty ideas, which can include everything, every kind of negative position which we have taken. If we don't let go of that, how can we experience the positive frames like happiness or peace or whatever we want to do, if we hold on to it? I mean, we would not read that last quotation, but this is the idea he expresses in that quotation. Now, it's not as if the positive thinking means only the affirmative statement as against the negative statement. We are told that the affirmative statement is actually an affirmation of will. To say that I will be calm is much better way of framing than saying that I will not get angry, because it is an affirmation of will. But we also were reminded again in the preliminary remarks that it means all kinds of wholesome qualities that we have to think about. In Buddhism, they speak of at least four qualities. They say that if you are having, say, thoughts of anger and hatred, you must replace them by metta or thoughts of loving kindness. If you have, say, thoughts of indifference towards others, you must replace them by the thoughts of mudita, sympathetic joy. You have thoughts of cruelty, replace them by the thoughts of compassion. And the fourth one is also there. So similar, and out of them, a lot of emphasis is put on love. In our today's reading, we heard it read that a man who is harboring thoughts of revenge, he ties his mind with the intention of retaliation. As some Christian saint said, love and do what you will. In fact, you can't do anything wrong if you really love. And love, we don't mean the ordinary love. But if you really have that unconditional love without expectation of return and the thoughts of charity for others, you really can't go wrong. So he says, love and do what you will. In the Voice of the Silence at one place, we are given a very beautiful imagery. We are told that if you are traveling in the forest, the forest is, say, very thick and the sunlight doesn't enter the forest. There is the fear of wild animals. In that, if the traveler comes across a sunny glade, a patch where the sunlight is seen, what relief and joy he would feel. Similarly, our ordinary thoughts and our ordinary consciousness is so full of thoughts of he did this to me, criticizing, fault finding, envy, jealousy. In that, if a human being makes an effort to have the thoughts of kindness, charity, forgiveness, he would experience the same experience like the traveler coming across a sunny glade. For that moment, you feel a kind of a knot has come out, or it has come loose from our heart and mind. When we really forget that enmity and we try and be charitable to that person. And for those moments, it goes to the extent of saying, it is like the spot on earth mirror from Amitabha's paradise. It's like for those moments, your consciousness is going to reflect the purity and clarity of Amitabha Buddha's consciousness. You do feel relieved, you know. For a long time, you've been harboring some thoughts of criticism and revenge, and suddenly you let go of those thoughts and replace them by thoughts of kindness. Something happens within. You really feel the lightness of being, the lightness of heart. So that is what is said about positive thoughts. And in the light of Asia, Buddha has again emphasized this. When he comes across a person who is, after taking his bath, he's called somebody called Sangala. After taking his bath, he is seen to be scattering red and white rice in all four directions. And the Buddha says, why are you doing this, brother? And he says, that is the custom, to ward off evil from all the different sides. And the Buddha says that instead of scattering rice in four directions, you scatter thoughts of loving kindness in different directions. Then we are given specific things in the east to ward off evil from this and ward off evil from that. So the antidote for warding off evil or unwholesome things coming to you is not this outward ritual. It is the very thought. And we are told that if you are pure within, it acts as a shield. It automatically will throw off. It's like a high wind, a dust against the high wind. If there is a purity within, the purity of thoughts within. So he says that. And I think with that note, we would just close. In the second last quotation, Buddha says this, regarding, this is the question most of us would have, that if people around are so bad, if they do evil to us, how can we be good to them or harbor thoughts of, say, kindness and goodness? So in this Tita is Majjhima Nikaya, the Buddha is quoted as saying, when men speak evil of ye, thus must ye train yourselves. Our heart shall be unwavering. No evil word will we send forth, but compassionate of others' welfare will we abide, of kindly heart, without resentment. And that man who thus speaks will be suffused with thoughts accompanied by love, and so abide. And making that our standpoint, we will suffuse the whole world with loving thoughts, far-reaching, wide-spreading, boundless, free from hate, free from ill will, and so abide. Thus, brethren, must ye train yourselves. Friends, there are really very few minutes left for asking questions. Last week, the student is talking about last Friday assignment. We were studying this topic of prayer, and prayer is also thoughts, she says. So will these thoughts, if they are really pure, will they have some effect? In one place the student came across this thing about thoughts. How intense are our thoughts is one of the things which is important. How pure are our thoughts? Are they really pure without, say, expectation or without anything, say, a result or a benefit to ourselves? Are they really what we call altruistic thoughts? That is also one of the things. And the intensity of thought. Most of the time, we at our level are not able to have such intensity of thoughts which can, really go and bring about that great benefit. But yet, the good thoughts are not lost. In fact, in one place, in notes on the Bhagavad Gita, when Mr. Judge talks about the sending of the powerful good thoughts, he points out that what in fact happens, people pray and pray, and they feel that they are praying to some God outside, and when the result is done, they feel that the God has brought it about. But really, it is only the power of thought. That in India, he says, that there is an orphanage, and there are some good-hearted people who feel that this orphanage should get financial help or whatever. They are sending out good thoughts, and what happens in fact is that not any outside God is hearing the prayer, but these thoughts, if they are intense and powerful enough, pure enough, they touch hearts of receptive minds. That if there are people receptive enough to catch these thoughts, they catch